This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Today, it's a great pleasure to have a musician on the show. Her name is Ellen Stanley. She goes by the stage name Mother Banjo. Her CD is The Sad and Found. Ellen Stanley, Mother Banjo, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
I read in your biographical material that you went to Oberlin. Were you studying music at Oberlin? There's a lot of musicians there, I know.
It's true, and it's one of the reasons I chose to go to school there. I was classically trained growing up, and I played a bunch of instruments. Actually, not the banjo, but I played piano and oboe, and I sang all growing up. And although I knew at that time I didn't really want to be a professional musician, but I wanted to make sure there was a lot of art and music around me. And Oberlin just really seemed to suit my interests. I was a writer and very interested in literature. And it has all those things. Lots of great writers teach there. And of course, a lot of great music happens at the conservatory. So that certainly inspired me to go there. And then of course, when I attended college, I ended up studying something not that I'd planned on studying at all.
What were you studying?
I was studying African-American studies. And I went in thinking maybe I'd be a comp lit major, a creative writing major. And I just took one African-American history class, and it kind of turned my world upside down. Being a white girl growing up in the North, it just really struck me how multifaceted history was. And it seems really obvious now as an adult saying that. But at the time, it kind of rocked my world a bit because, you know, I thought of history as what you just read out of a textbook and you learned the facts of the American presidents and that was about it. So really learning all the different facets of history was very compelling to me. And so it kind of changed the trajectory of what I studied at Oberlin.
And what did you do then with that degree right after college?
Well, I, of course, like many liberal arts majors, it doesn't guide you exactly to one specific career, but I've been doing a lot of folk music work on campus. While I was studying African-American studies, I also did a lot of radio, so it's fun to be on the radio with you.
I love radio. It's a great little medium, isn't it?
It is. It's wonderful, and I booked a folk festival there, and I was doing a lot of that stuff. So I was kind of interested in doing art stuff. But I had some political interests, so I wasn't really sure what I'd do. But I moved to Minneapolis. I had some friends who were moving there, and I really liked the progressive vibe of the cities a lot. And so I moved there, and I started working at a social service nonprofit. When I first got there, I started doing some grant writing, and that was my first job out of college. And it was really, I learned a lot when I was there, and it wasn't really what I wanted to be doing ultimately, but it was good work, and it kind of led me on a path to other things.
You mentioned your political interests in college and maybe in Minneapolis too. What were some of those? Or are some of those?
Well, of course, social justice, especially pertaining to race, was a very strong, deep held interest of mine, and so I was always involved in the various political groups on campus. And then when I moved to the Twin Cities, one of the things I liked about the Twin Cities was, it wasn't, there's a lot of other parties in addition to the DFL and Republican parties and the usual stuff. So it was a very compelling place to be, especially because when I moved to the Twin Cities, Wellstone was in the middle of, running for re-election. And I had some friends working on that campaign, and I was very involved in that. And of course, the campaign that followed after his death. So it's a very stimulating place to be, the Twin Cities.
That must have been a shocker, though, that plane crash. Where were you? How did you get that news? And how'd you integrate that?
Yeah, it was a really scary day. I remember hearing about it on the radio, and one of my best friends from college, he was assistant to the campaign manager, and I just heard that that there were some staffers that were on this plane, and it crashed, and you only heard the basic info. And of course, I was concerned that he was okay, and so I called up my friend, and turned out he got a call not long before they took off saying, you know, the weather's looking a little iffy, but I think we're going to go up. And I thought, oh, how horrible to get that call and be on the receiving end. But that was a really sad moment for all of Minnesota. I mean, and many people beyond, because his work touched so many lives, Paul Wellstone's and Sheila Wellstone's.
But for people who worked with Paul and Sheila Wellstone and worked on those campaigns, it just must have been heartbreaking.
It was. And again, it was a real family. You know, the when you work on a campaign, it's always that way. But people really had a strong belief in not just him as a candidate, but in the work that he was doing. And so that was a really hard moment. But I actually, it was funny because there's a lot of connection between the folk music and the politics, of course, especially in progressive politics. But I remember being at the what should have been the victory party for Mondale after Wellstone passed, and I was down in St. Paul with the campaign staffers, and I ran into Bob Feldman, who was the founder of Red House. And I wasn't working for Red House Records at the time, but I knew him, and he was handing out these buttons saying, what was it? There was like something about what would Paul Wellstone do or something like that, and he was handing them out, and it was a wonderful spirit in that place, even though it was very sad at the same time.
Yeah, that was a blow, because he was really the not just the senator from Minnesota, but kind of the progressive senator for the country. I mean, others have stepped it up, like Bernie Sanders and Russ Feingold in this quirky way, but but there's no one quite like Paul with his energy, too, is such so infectious, so positive, and the idea that we could really get things done and change things for the better, which you felt a little bit the night Obama won, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Where were you then, and what was your reaction to that?
Well, I was with some friends. Actually, I had a group of friends. We used to get together every Thursday night and watch episodes of The Daily Show and Colbert Report, and we would just have drinks and talk politics every Thursday night. And it was a lot of that same crew got together to watch the election results come in, and it was a really amazing moment. But I think probably the most touching moment I had surrounding the Obama campaign in the Twin Cities was specifically when he claimed the candidacy for the Democratic Party in St. Paul, and I was there on the floor, and that was a pretty special moment. It seemed there are some key moments that have happened in the Twin Cities in recent years in the political world. So that was really special, I think.
What's your sense of Obama now?
I don't know. It's a tough time to be president right now. And
yeah, who'd want that job?
Well, that's exactly what I always say. I think, you know, even the people who I disagree with most in politics, I think, well, God bless them for trying. I mean, that's just like the hardest job. I would never want to be president. And I'm glad that someone does, because someone needs to be doing that job and doing that work. But I don't know. For me, it's a little too soon to tell for Obama. I mean, I think as with every, even the leaders that I love and vote for, there's always moments where you think, oh, really? And, oh, you compromised on that. But then you think, I don't know what I'd do in that situation. So, but for me, it's too soon to tell, but I'm just very happy that someone who means well and has a lot of intelligence and surrounds them with people with a lot of intelligence, for me, is just so affirming, because I was really feeling like our country was going down this path of people who didn't want to think about things and sort of an anti-academic approach. And
very
I find that really troubling, because I want the smartest people making some of these decisions.
Bush was about as anti-intellectual as you come, except maybe till Sarah Palin. And then there's a pair to draw to. My guest today is Ellen Stanley, who goes by the stage name Mother Banjo. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor of the Progressive Magazine. You're listening to Progressive Radio. Tell me a little bit about how you fell in love with the banjo, and why don't you play a song for us too?
Sure. Well, I've always been drawn to the banjo. I got interested in folk music and blues music at the end of high school, and then I kind of, at Oberlin, it kind of got solidified that this was the music that spoke to me the most, although I have very eclectic listening habits. Again, classically trained, raised on rock music, so I have a lot of different interests. But the banjo, there's something about the tenor of the banjo that is both, most, a lot of people associate with kind of happy, like Beverly Hillbillies kind of plunky bluegrass kind of sounds, but some of that old-timey music from Appalachia, it's just heartbreaking and sad, and part of it is all the space in the music, because the banjo is a staccato instrument, so the notes don't sustain the way a guitar does or some other instruments or a piano. And so as a result, I like playing with the space between the notes as much as the notes themselves. So I always loved the banjo, but I didn't play it. And then I thought, well, this is stupid. Alan, you've learned other instruments. You should just buy a banjo and learn how to play it. So I did. When I moved to Minneapolis, I thought I really missed playing music with other people and being around other people who did. And you can't really accompany yourself on the oboe when you sing. And so I needed something more portable than a piano. And so, I picked up the banjo, and then it was shortly thereafter that I started writing songs, because although I had been writing for many years and I'd been playing music, they never kind of met. I never wrote songs that I was really happy with until I picked up the banjo, and I think it was maybe because I wasn't as good of a banjo player, so it made me get back to basics, you know, didn't get too arty, you know. So that's how I came to be play the banjo, and why I called myself Mother Banjo, as I thought. I do work in the music world separately, so I wanted to come up with a sort of different stage name, giving myself a chance to get comfortable with it and not have people make big assumptions about my music. And then also I thought, for me, even though I'm not the hottest picker around, I'm not like a Earl Scruggs or Steve Martin or someone like that, or Bella Fleck, I thought... for me, it's all about the banjo. It all started with the banjo. So
there you go. So what are you going to play for us?
I think I'm going to do this song. It's a gospel song, and it's really about... I write a lot of gospel music, and a lot of it I just love gospel music. It makes me feel really good. And I grew up singing a lot of this kind of music. But also, this song in particular is kind of about how we're always waiting for something, waiting for God, waiting for something good to happen to fix up the world. And maybe it's like already here and we just have to take a look at it. So it's called I'm Waiting. To come down, I'm waiting, oh, I'm waiting, waiting for God to come around. Artisan house, I feel so alone, waiting for God to come down to pick up the parts, help me build a home, waiting for God to come around. I'm waiting, oh, I'm waiting, waiting for God to come down. I'm waiting, oh, I'm waiting, waiting for God to come around. The world is a mess, it's all come undone, waiting for God to come down, to clean it all up, make it shine like the sun, waiting for God to come around. We're waiting, oh, we're waiting, waiting for God to come down. Waiting, oh, waiting, waiting for God to come around. I look for him there, I look for him here, just waiting for God to come down. But I found him in you, I found him in me, he looks God has come around. No more waiting, no more waiting, waiting for God to come down. No more waiting, no more waiting, waiting for God to come around. No more waiting, no more waiting, waiting for God to down. No more waiting, no more waiting, No more waiting, no more waiting, waiting for God to come down. No more waiting, no more waiting, waiting for God to come around.
That's Ellen Stanley, Mother Banjo, playing her song I'm Waiting, and that's on Sad and Found?
Actually, that's a new song. Just wrote it last fall.
Oh, it's a real pretty song with a nice little twist at the end, and it even appeals to a godless progressive like me.
Well, that's kind of what I think the best gospel music should do, that, and in my opinion. And I'm always a bit surprised at how much people gravitate towards this music. I mean, and I'm not surprised, because it's music that's supposed to rile you up and excite you, and it speaks to people. Like, I play a lot of bars and clubs, and it's funny, the pub gigs, those are where the gospel songs go over best. And maybe it's also because they're simple and people can sing along with their beers. And I think that's where gospel music should be performed in bars.
Maybe because they're sinning there too.
Exactly. Maybe they need that redemption. I don't know.
You call yourself a progressive Christian. What do you mean by that?
And it's funny. I often don't even... although I do consider myself a Christian, it's a word that I'm always hesitant to use, because I know how much baggage comes with that. Working and living in progressive circles, Christian sometimes is almost like a dirty word, you know? People have a lot of assumptions about you. But what I basically believe is just that loving other people, loving the creation, and loving people is kind of what it's all about. And so, I basically live my life with those tenets, and pretty much those are the core ones. And that kind of guides all my politics, including social justice and all those things.
It is important not to make too broad generalizations, and some of us on the progressive side do. And they're progressive Christians, they're right-wing Christians, they're
right.
You know, intolerant atheists,
and
intolerant atheists, and they're. There are people who are religious and not religious, who are difficult, impossible people, and those who are nice people too. So you get them all. We're very careful. We try to be over at the progressive and just not making these categorical statements. But on the other hand, there are right-wing, really far right-wing evangelical Christians who are trying to take this country in another direction, and mm-hmm. a very frightening direction.
Yeah.
And I just wonder sometimes, I mean, it may be easier for you to talk to them because you
maybe,
have some shared vocabulary, but for an atheist,
well, I think it is hard.
Atheist progressive Jew like me, I'm just kind of out in left field.
Well, I think that's one of the challenges in general, is that I think a lot of progressive Christians, they're so hesitant to talk about their faith in any way, because they don't want to be labeled in that group, or, you know, with the conservative Christian evangelical segment, that I think there's a hesitancy to even engage in that conversation, which I think is too bad. I think the more everyone talked with each other on all sides of the political spectrum and different religious belief systems, I think the better off our world would be. I think that's the problem, is when you don't talk to each other, you talk about each other. So, I guess I'd really...
I mean, is there anyone, Ellen Stanley, you don't think you can talk to? I mean, you were an African-American studies major. Mm-hmm. Racial justice is really important to you, as it is me. And so if you hear someone say something racist, I mean, really blatant, ugly racist, mm-hmm. I mean, the question is, what do you do with that?
Man, that's a big question. I don't know. I think what I would do, I don't know, what would be, as I would say something about that. I would just say, if it's, I mean, it depends on the context. If it's someone you're personally having a conversation with, I don't think it's that hard to just say, you know, whoa there. Because sometimes people just let things slide, and you kind of hear it in passing, and later you think, oh, I should have said something. But often if you just say, you know, did you hear what you just said? People often actually will take pause and think about it. And because I think a lot of times people say things without really meaning them. You know, they just
come,
programmed in a certain way, you know.
And your beliefs came out of your background, your family. You say your parents were Christian hippies. That was a funny description.
Yeah, I mean, if you see their wedding photographs, you'll know what I'm talking about. My dad's hair and beard were like close to his belly button. And like me, he had really thick hair, so it was like kind of a mane. And my mom, long blonde hair. They were very much Christians, and they sort of raised their kids in a really kind of mixed environment in terms of when they first got married. They moved to New Haven, and were attending a predominantly African American church. And then they owned a bookstore, a religious bookstore. So there were a lot of academics from Yale who'd be coming in and out. And those were my first memories. And then my father was going to Yale Divinity School at that time. And then we moved to a suburb in New Haven. Well, that I grew up in that house my whole life. And in that town, it was mostly Jewish or Catholic. So in other words, we had a lot of, it wasn't really actually till I moved to the Midwest that it seemed like that there was a little less diversity in terms of religion. I was really everyone was a different religion where I grew up, and that was not a big deal. And I was not, even though my father is an Episcopal priest, I wasn't known as like the priest kid or anything. It was just everyone kind of believed something different. I went to a lot of bar and bat mitzvahs, and my parents really encouraged that, and I think that really shaped a lot of who I am and my beliefs.
Are your folks still around?
Yep. They're living in New Haven, or just outside.
Oh, you're lucky. That's nice.
Yeah.
We got about 6-7 minutes left. I want to get one or two more songs in, so
sure.
Why don't you play another one? We'll see if we can get the third one in. If we can't, it's not a tragedy.
Okay. Well,
I just as soon talk too, because I love talking to people who are bringing a lot of enthusiasm and energy and insight as you are.
Well, it's a real treat to be on your radio show, Matt. I've been a big fan of The Progressive for a long time.
Well, it's nice of you to say. Ellen Stanley's my guest, if you're just tuning in. She goes by the stage name Mother Banjo. CD is called The Sad and Found. And mm-hmm. I'm Matt Rothschild, as she's suggesting. I'm the editor at The Progressive Magazine, and this is Progressive Radio.
Well, I'm going to do a song that, since we were just talking about my parents and my background growing up, there's a lot of, we listen to a lot of different music at home. You know, we listen to a lot of pop music and also, of course, the old 60s folk music and kind of everything in between. But, of course, there was a fair amount of gospel music and a tune that I always knew growing up, which is funny because it's not really, wasn't sung in the church, but I don't even know how I learned it. But I remember singing it around my parents. It's an old Shaker Round, and it's called Come Life, Shaker Life. And basically the tune goes, come life, shaker life, come life eternal, shake, shake out of me all that is carnal. I'll take nimble steps, I'll be a David, I'll show Michael twice how he behaved. So it's, you know, this definitely a shaker kind of style tune, but it's such a cool melody, especially when it's sung in a round with a lot of voices. And I've always liked it, and I thought it's such a, it's supposed to be sort of a praise song, and it's, when you break down the melody, it's actually pretty minor and sad, and so I thought it needed
new lyrics?
Yeah, new lyrics. So this is my death song called Come Life. Sort of about a man facing death and not really ready for it. Come life, come to me. My bones are tired, work has driven from me all my desire. I can't make it out, the hand is fading, the words on the pages, they have left me. Come life, come to me. When did you lose me? One day I woke up and there was no green. I saw gray and white, a blur of snow time. I am full of gold, I hear a crow cry. Come life, come to me, the light eternal beckons to me, cannot but follow. Oh, come life, come to me, I see him waiting, I guess he thought I was worth saving. Oh, I am worth saving.
That's Ellen Stanley, otherwise known as Mother Banjo. And the title is, I Am Worth Saving, is that the title?
Come Life, actually. Come Life. Ironically enough, with, about a man facing death. But yeah, that song is actually my first EP called Swing Low. And
I love the crow crying in there. That was a nice little bit, too.
Yeah, well, crows, if you read a lot of literature or hear a lot of those old traditional songs, when crows come in, you know it's bad news. It's the reason why they're a murder of crows, you know.
Absolutely. We got about 2 or 3 minutes left. Mm-hmm. I think we should just kind of talk through to the end.
Sure.
And tell me how it is just traveling on the road.
Oh, it's great. I do have a day job, so I'm very lucky because I get the best of both worlds. I get to have a home life, and yet I also get to go on these little jaunts. This is part of a little mini tour I'm doing. I was in Chicago last night, and I'll be in Wisconsin tonight, and then I'll just be back in the Twin Cities. But I do go on longer trips. I was out in Montana for a week earlier this year, and I hit both coasts. I've been touring a lot supporting this latest album, The Sad and Found, and it's wonderful. I really love driving around. I love seeing new towns, new cities, meeting new people. Going back to what we were talking about before in terms of people talking to each other, I think if everyone had to go on the road the way a lot of musicians do, your world would definitely open up, and you'd understand people a lot better. And I get to meet people along the way, like you. So it's a real treat.
Music does have that power to bring people together. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned your day job or alluded to it a couple times.
Yeah.
It's with Red House Records. This is using a totally different part of your brain, though, isn't it?
Yeah, sort of. It is kind of funny because I started working at Red House Records before I was really touring and playing. I was playing the banjo a little bit and writing some songs, but I wasn't really performing out formally. And so I've been promoting music for many years, ever since my college days. So promoting musicians I really love, musicians that you've had on the show like Eliza Gilkison and people like that, are artists I've admired my whole life. And so getting to work with them it's just like the easiest job in the world to promote their music. But it is funny when you start playing your own music, you know, now I have to promote myself. And it's a lot easier to promote other people than to promote your own work, I think. But especially in the beginning when I was kind of sheepish because I thought I work with so many amazing songwriters that I Grammy nominated and Grammy winning musicians that I thought, oh, I'm such a hack, you know, why am I doing this? But it's funny, Red House has been so supportive of my music, and a lot of them have been involved in some ways in my recording projects, and my boss has even said, Ellen, you really need a new publicist.
Well, let me publicize it once more because we're just about out of time. Ellen Stanley has been my guest today. Her stage name, Mother Banjo, her latest CD, The Sad and Found. Thanks so much for being my guest.
Thanks so much.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.